episode 27 of Gamers Footnotes with two S's. We haven't been saying that as much recently, and I've felt incomplete, so we're going to bring that back. You can reach us, as always, at gamersfootnotes.com, where our the episodes are, and gamersfootnotes@gmail.com, there we go, which is the email address.
And also on iTunes.
So drop by iTunes, download the show. Of course, I don't know how you're listening to us if you haven't found one of these two things, but that's a mystery for another time. I, as always, am Steven, along with my illustrious co-host.
And I'm JT.
And today we're going to continue looking at genres of video games. We've already done a couple of segments on RPGs, both Western and Eastern-styled RPGs, and the crossovers. We've talked a little bit about adventure games and puzzle games. And to keep this train running, we're going to talk a little bit about RTSs, real-time strategy games. First, a little bit of a definition. If you were just looking for the end of the show because you absolutely don't care about genres of games, JT is going to discuss Flappy Birds a little bit, which is apparently a thing, which I am not familiar with.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to enlightening everybody on Flappy Birds.
And I'm going to discuss EA and gamers' relationship to EA and why we apparently need to go all Dr. Strangelove up on this thing. So now, jumping back into, and I'll explain that reference later, stay tuned. Yes, using my best radio announcer voice. Anyway, a little bit on RTSs. What is a real-time strategy game, for anyone who's curious? So, you had kind of early computer games, you would see occasionally strategy games, which were effectively board games. Think Civilization. You have pieces, sometimes a lot of pieces, sometimes complicated pieces. But
and a lot of them are born out of the World War II board games.
Like Axis and Allies, yeah. Diplomacy.
Panzer General,
General. In any of the... Risk.
Risk.
And before that, Stratego. And ultimately, going back far enough, Chess, Bones, and... any of the board games. And they evolved into the strategy game. And typically, they were turn-based. So the original strategy games were turn-based, or what we now call turn-based strategy games.
Like Chess.
Like chess. They more complicated pieces, but still basically pieces. So think Risk, but with a computer, which they made. Fantastic. Simultaneous Turn Risk is... I love Simultaneous Turn Risk. Risk 2, for anyone who wants to look into that. But also used a die, icosahedral dies.
Really?
Yeah, 20-sided die. It it had like standard Risk 2, but Risk 2 was actually... I've spent many hours with Risk 2. They evolved, though, into, well, what would happen if... And so you did. You started to have kind of simultaneous turn strategy games where everyone would submit their moves, and then they would occur, which there were a couple of board games that played with that. I think Diplomacy has elements of it where you write things down and then execute, and it's not really the same thing. But there were board games where you would kind of, you know, store your moves and then execute them at the same time. The first multiplayer strategy games were... oftentimes play by email, kind of the same concept. You would submit your move because we didn't have servers and all your fancy internets and the wishings and shushings that you kids have grown up with. and you would, you know, so. But out of all of this, finally evolved the concept of once we have a stable connection, once we can really have two people together, if, you know, the next iteration, well, and it really even before the internet, what would happen if we had kind of these board game pieces, you know, this sort of, you controlled a lot of different things, but you did it in real time. They moved together. And from that, you had the very early real-time strategy games, the first two, and there were a few before this, but the first two that I think were kind of entered the mainstream consciousness would be Command & Conquer.
Yeah.
And World of Warcraft. Warcraft. Just Warcraft. Warcraft, Orcs, and Humans.
Both of which were DOS games.
Both of which were DOS games. And both of which were not intended for children nearly as young as I was when I got them, but fortunately my parents did not spend a lot of time looking over my shoulder.
Which is a caveat. Parents, you should probably look over your kid's shoulder.
Right, because I want to say those were maybe both before the ESRB was much of a thing.
Oh, way before.
I don't remember exactly when the ESRB became...
To me, it always became a thing when they started doing the real video, like when Commander 3, when it had the video cutscenes, and people were like, is it a movie? Why is it starring porn stars? Why? What is going on?
Why is it doing that?
And then it was sort of like, we have to create a rating for the video part because of the MPAA, and then it was like, Well, maybe we should do this for the rest of games. And then
a fascinating conversation on how the MPAA came to exist and why, contrary to popular belief, neither it nor the ESRB are governmental entities. They actually have no authority to do anything. But
it's an industry regulating itself for its own purposes.
Right. In the case of, and it all grew up out of the production code. And look that up if you're interested in the silver age of cinema. Or the age of the silver screen, the golden age of cinema, I guess. Doesn't matter. Point is, we're not going to talk. That will almost certainly be an episode later, is talking about the SRB. For now, these games were very heavily pixelated. They're almost comical to look at now. But they were, you commanded groups of units, and both of those instances involved you building buildings to gather resources, which you then used to buy your units. So there was a base management perspective, which in the case of some real-time strategy games had played with the idea of base building. Axis and Allies, you had factories. Later variants of Risk had a certain amount of base building, though original Risk, not really so much. Things like that, though. And so they kind of took that concept and played with it, with the big change being that you were controlling all the pieces at the same time. As the computer, because Warcraft and Command & Conquer, I don't think either one originally had multiplayer.
One of the Command & Conquerors did. Warcraft did, because you could do it through IPX.
Okay.
You had to be on a...
It's been a long time.
You had to be on a local... The reason why most people know to play multiplayer is you had to be local.
Yeah, it was all... That's right.
It required you to have two computers. You had to either do IPX. I don't think
TCP... having two computers at the time was not trivial.
No. And having an IPX network wasn't trivial. Yeah. I mean, that's... When, if you ever heard anybody talk about, like, a token ring connector.
Yeah.
I mean, that's DOS. I think Windows 3.11 was around, which the 0.11 was networking.
Yeah.
For everybody who wonders why it was named that way.
So, the point, I did not play multiplayer on either of those. You know, I lived in a little cow town. We certainly, no one had two computers. Heck, there weren't too many people that had computers, period.
I did have two.
We did not. We had one. We were pretty happy about the one. But we, but they did have multiplayer, but again, it was local. So you kind of, you had to have it networked. So that was not really a major selling point of the game, I wouldn't say. People were getting it because... I don't really remember how I was introduced to World of Warcraft. I do remember getting it. And then Command & Conquer, and instantly fell in love. I mean, I've been playing RTSs since I was 8 or 9.
Well, the thing that I think we both forget, and that I'm always constantly reminded of, is there wasn't just tons of games. Like, when Command & Conquer came out, that was, like, the only new game for, like, months.
Walmart didn't really have... and I'm using... You know, Walmart is a gigantic retailer. They had console games, but the PC games were typically on a spindle, you know, a little rotating display, and there was one of them, and most of them were awful. Most of them were in the kind of the adventure game genre that...
And that's when, I mean, Command & Conquer is ultimately EA...
Yeah, it was not at the time. It was Westwood Studios.
Westwood Studios, and that's how you knew it was cool. I mean, it was always like, oh, this Westwood is the new Origin game.
Yeah.
This is the new Westwood game. Westwood, so you just would buy it.
Westwood was the... Westwood and Blizzard,
yeah,
who was just Blizzard at the time, were the two big names in real-time strategy games. And I remember, you know, the cutscenes, which Blizzard is known for their cutscenes now, and the cutscenes in that were really impressive, but it was a painted backdrop while words scrolled up the screen.
But it was new.
It was new. It was something, because you hadn't really... DOS didn't do that. You didn't have, you know, kind of these things. So, a little trip down memory lane. But I know, of course, people are going to correct me. Oh, well, this was the first RTS. This was the first RTS. I really feel pretty confident that those were the first two RTSs that really entered mainstream consciousness.
Yeah. Command & Conquer, definitely, in Warcraft.
Certainly for people who weren't around at the time or weren't aware of things going on at the time, those are obviously the two that survived well into the...
And I feel like Warcraft 2 was more popular than Warcraft 1.
Oh, definitely. Certainly. Warcraft 2 is what made the franchise.
And that may have been the first one that had multiplayer. And Warcraft 1 may not have.
See, I didn't think the original Warcraft had multiplayer.
You could be right. The more I think about it, because I remember Warcraft 2 and Doom were around the same time and had both IPS.
Yeah. And Warcraft 2 definitely, because I did play Warcraft 2 through LAN, because that was when schools started getting computer labs. But the teachers didn't know how to use the computers, so you could do pretty much whatever you wanted.
God bless shareware.
Right. So those were, so this really all, and I guess we haven't really talked about turn-based strategies, which I'm now regretting. We probably should have done that one first, but more on turn-based strategies later.
We'll do that next week.
Exactly. Next week, turn-based strategy. But real-time strategy really kind of comes and goes. I think it's a very wave genre where there will be a lot of real-time strategies and then it kind of disappears for a while. Because we went years between, famously, we went years between StarCraft and StarCraft II, for example.
Well, and you sort of have, real-time strategy games are sort of dominated by society, with what's popular in society. So when fantasy and science fiction are popular, you see like the craft games, you see Command and Conquer, you see these sort of futuristic games. Then we went through, when I got introduced to RTSs, which was when Windows 95 came out, you're seeing Age of Empires, Age of Empires 2, then later on you have Empire Earth.
Were they always Windows? Or yes. Were they always...
Age of Empires 1 was in that weird DOS 95 hybrid.
I'm sorry, were they always Windows Studios? Who made Age of Empires?
Ensemble.
Okay.
And then Ensemble got bought by Microsoft. Okay. But they were published... Microsoft,
that's what I was looking for.
But they were published by Microsoft always.
Okay, that's what I thought.
That's
I thought
when Microsoft was... We need to explain... There was a time when Windows 95 came out when people still didn't think the internet was a fad. I mean, famously so.
Back when it was still called the intranet, typically, because people didn't understand the difference between the two.
I mean, and it was a real question. And Microsoft, because that was the big selling point of 95. Is that we're going to start making the internet a thing.
Prodigy.
And
AOL.
Real-time strategy games became part of the best way to sort of highlight the thing you could do on the internet that you couldn't do previously. That you could have these four-hour epic Rome versus the Greeks battle games in Age of Empires.
Age of Mythology.
Age of Mythology came down later. Mm-hmm. Age of Empires 2 is maybe the most successful out of all the RTSs. Not the most successful franchise, but it sold a lot of copies.
It may be. I would almost bet that purely because of market demographics and how much more common computers are, StarCraft II may have sold more.
Oh, that's a good point, too.
Because there are just more people now. Age of Empires 2 suffered by the fact that there really weren't that many gamers.
No, but almost like everybody.
We all owned it. Yeah, we all had. It came in one of the thick, because it was on CD, wasn't it?
Yes.
So it came in one of the thick cases because I think it was on like four discs or something like that.
Yeah. And that Age of Empires 2 is actually my first real time strategy game. I did play Z and DOS beforehand, but that was almost more of a tactical one, even though it was real time. Yeah. How it worked is you controlled the squares. I don't know if you ever played Z.
Right. No, I...
But Age of Empires 2, and that blew my mind. I mean, it was like you could play a four-hour game over the internet, and all these units were different, and it was so complicated, and it was fun, and I've played probably thousands of Age of Empires games, but I think that's the problem you now have with RTSs, is at some point being able to sit down and play a four-hour game... does not become an easy task.
No, and so as gamers age, perhaps that's harmed a little. And yet, StarCraft II is still, you know, it was in many ways the first one to go to the super internet integrated route. Sure,
and it's an esport.
Exactly. And where, you know, they embraced after, so StarCraft spawned a little known mod called Defense of the Ancients. Warcraft 3. It's Warcraft 3, sorry. Warcraft 3 spawned a little known mod called Defense of the Ancients. It resulted in kind of a lot of legal problems related to who actually owns stuff that players create with Blizzard's tools.
We still have a great answer to that question.
Which is actually a fascinating legal question.
Which we've discussed previously.
Yes. But the point here is Blizzard realized that, one, they needed to really tighten up their terms of use for who owned what, and they have. Read the EULA sometime for using their... And two, they could actually drastically extend the lifespan of their games, their RTS game, by really encouraging people to make sort of alternate games within the game to you know, use the mechanics differently. And so StarCraft II really, really pushes that. I mean, there are achievements for playing these, you know, player-made games and things like that. And so it was sort of, it's kind of kind of where we are now, where where Battlefield 4 is, where all these games are going, where it's super integrated with the online universe, even to an extent. I mean, we've had online games for years at this point, but kind of we began with, you know, this is a board game playing out in real time that you can play by yourself. And we've sort of moved to, and no one can see my hands, I don't know why I'm gesturing, but we've sort of moved to the other end where now everything is moving towards hyper, for anyone who's not familiar with, I'm just going to use Battlefield 4, when you launch the game, it actually launches a web browser. And then you launch the game through the web browser. You have no choice but to be not just connected to the internet. You know, that's a DRM thing. It's not just about being connected to the internet. You have to be in their media site, absorbing, you know, that to even get to the game. StarCraft 2 has sort of moved that way. You know, Blizzard has now integrated all their games into one Battle.net portal. All of your games, StarCraft 2, World of Warcraft, all of them are launched through the same device. And so that's sort of the evolution of RTSs, even more so than many other genres, is sort of marked by how multiplayer things could get, because this is something that multiplayer really took off with, these real-time games. Because you really can't do that. I think it's as simple as there really isn't another media beyond video games where this can be a thing.
Right. I mean, it's the... Yeah, you can get together four people and play a Risk board game, but people are going to get bored. People are going to wander off. There's going to be an argument about the rules. You're going to have to go look up the rules. In an RTS game, the computer's solving all of those problems for you. It's just literally getting absorbed in the game. And
even though they're 4 hours... They're still typically shorter than a board game.
Right, because there's none of the friction,
right,
for lack of a better term, that comes into doing
it. Well, even Civ 5, I mean, it's just more stately.
Right.
It's, you know, the naval battle versus the pitched beach engagement. You know, it's you're planning a lot of moves ahead. It's chess. It's very elaborate chess, but it's chess. Real-time strategy games are their own thing. I mean, you can't really compare them to chess. They're just... they're just different. They're strategy and a different kind of axis.
It's quick thinking tactics.
Yes. And
you've sort of hit the nail on the head. The big thing that is the longevity of RTS games is that there's a lot of variations in win conditions. So a lot of times in chess, there's only one win condition, which is you basically checkmate the king. You cease to give the king a move on the other side. In an RTS game, you can, to use Age of Empires 2, you can collect all the relics, you can build a wonder, you can wipe out the other side, you can form a treaty with some of the teams, and then win on a win condition through teamwork.
But even these things evolved. And then they evolved some more. In the original Warcraft, it was pretty much kill them. Kill them all, God will know his own. or the Titans will know their own, I guess, in this particular mythology. But we started Age of Empires really pushed a lot of that, especially with the diplomacy. Warcraft was always sort of about these two factions fighting each, even World of Warcraft. It's always sort of been about these two factions fighting to the death. StarCraft introduced a little bit more subtlety with diplomacy, but largely Blizzard's games are still about let's blow them up. Their campaigns have gotten more creative, but the esport version... I mean, esports, like it's like football. Ultimately, you got to have a pretty stable win condition or the metagame gets out of hand. People will claim that X victory type is unbalanced in, you know, Y game. So it's just easier to make it, well, who has the highest score at the end, which in this case is determined by who's still there. Whereas Age of Empires always sort of took the approach that, well, we can have sort of different ways. So I think in some sense, they've even evolved kind of along different lines based on what they're meant to be. No one, I think, really says Age of Empires is an esport.
No. It's sort of the evolution of these tabletop war games.
Exactly. It kind of continued down what else can we do? Whereas the Blizzard games sort of tended to move towards, purity of essence as an esport rather than a continuing evolutionary process, which is also why Blizzard, I think, focused so heavily on these side games, because on one level, their base game is pretty much the same thing every time. Now, they do it extraordinarily well. That's always been Blizzard's hallmark, is they do very little, but they do it extraordinarily well. And so I think, again, that's why they had to have the marketplace and all these little side games, is you really don't have a ton of variety.
And, One of the interesting things, sort of kind of loop back in to you talking about the mods, one of the interesting games that I played a variation of was Star Wars Galactic Battlegrounds, which is an Age of Empires mod with Star Wars characters that Lucas actually licensed.
I wish they'd made. I wish they'd make a new one of that. That's probably the one of the Age of Empires style games that I played. Well, maybe Age of Mythology. Age of Mythology. Oh, yeah. I had all the expansions to Galactic Battlegrounds.
That was a fun game.
I played it a huge amount. It's just a reskin. The Jedi are priests. Well, with more ranged.
You get more range and you get flight crafts, which is actually built in the Age of Empires 2 engine. It's just nobody had flight.
Right.
As a thing.
Age of Empires 3 doesn't have flight either, but it also has a lot more range.
Sure.
Big fan of Age of Empires 3.
And so you sort of saw that. Then you saw the other thing that killed RTS. Well, let's talk a little bit about the death of RTSs. And why you really just have StarCraft 2 now. And a few others scattered along through it, which I see as a point you disagree with.
Yeah, but we'll get to that. Let's hear
JT's crazy thoughts. the first point is RTS games, almost all the ones we've mentioned from the early times are all sprite-based, which was good for the RTS genre because it allowed you to have up to like thousands of units on the screen. I think Age of Empires 2 finally capped out at 250 a side and five or six sides going.
Well, use Total Annihilation where you could have... not Total Annihilation, I'm sorry, Supreme Commander.
Right.
Which is a spiritual successor, basically, to Total Annihilation, where you could have hundreds and hundreds of units on both sides.
Right, and the sprites allowed you to do that without any problems. Then you had the leap to 3D. And the leap of 3D really hurt RTS because you basically now had limits on how many units you could render and then transmit. And that's what got the Star Wars ones. There's been two or three attempts to make a 3D Star Wars game, none of which have been particularly successful.
It's why Warcraft 3 was zoomed in.
Right.
Is so that they could render fewer things on. There was physically less you could put on the screen.
Well, and that's why they have heroes, which are more powerful units, because it physically, instead of having 20 troops, you now have one troop to represent these 20 troops. So you sort of see this leap into 3D. You then had a problem of the internet wasn't fast enough to transmit all the data you needed to have for the synchronization errors. I mean, there was a time before broadband, a dark, dark time. That created sort of a problem. So you sort of saw the stagnation in RTSs where technology leapt ahead of the ability of the engine. It sort of leapt ahead in some areas and then dragged behind in others. So you sort of saw the stretching of what it would mean. You saw things like Age of Empires 3, which was not as well liked as Age of Empires 2 because of certain limitations of the technology. You saw that you had to hold points because that's a way for them to manage resources. So you saw the technical limitations sort of bleed into the game, where the holy grail of almost, I think, the RTS genre is you have some component that is like chess where you're picking where you're battling. So you have the strategic component, and then you zoom down into and play the actual real-time strategy battle to decide the outcome of the battle. And then you move on. So like a real war, in the sense where you have strategic goals and tactical goals. And you sort of do that, and we've never really gotten to the point to where technology has allowed that, up until about now.
And they're attempting it on Kickstarter with Novus Eterna.
Then the second problem I think you have is the last Ensemble RTS was the Halo one that they tried to make work on a control pad, which is a game I think we've all forgotten. I can't even remember the name of it. But the problem is you really can't play an RTS game on a controller.
Not competitively. You will be beaten by someone with a keyboard and 50 different keybinds.
Yeah, it's keyboard and mouse genre, which the sort of evolution of video games is going towards the controller because that's sort of become a slightly more popular way to control it. And certainly for economic reasons, being able to release a game on an Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, computer, PS4, Xbox One, and the PC, that's the way to make money. And the one unifying factor in all those things is the control pad. So you sort of see that this control pad problem has created a separate problem for RTSs, is that you're only really selling RTSs to predominantly PC power gamers, which, as much as we want to deny that this is the case, we're still a pretty small subset. So you really only see the most popular brands continuing to sell RTS games, and basically that's left you with StarCraft 2. They can sell millions of units because almost everybody will buy a copy of it. You haven't really seen any other games sort of make this leap into modern gaming, modern PC power users in a way. So the real problem I see with RTS is they've had it for a long time, a technological limitation, and now they sort of have an economic limitation because it's still a niche genre. It's a game where you have to want to play these tactical things. You have to want to spend the time to learn how the resources work, to sort of learn the metagame. I mean, the term metagame really comes from RTSs. And, I mean, you make an argument it came from RPGs, but that was sort of min-maxing, which has always been around. But a true meta came from this idea of what is the most efficient way for me to build an army the quickest? And that sort of became the meta. How much gold do I need? How much stone do I need? How much energy do I need? How much wood? You know, whatever the resource is, sort of figuring out the math to do that. And that's complicated. I mean, there's a real skill set in the StarCraft II players beyond just being able to click keys and mouse fast. It's being able to sort of either be able to do the math or intrinsically understand the math enough to understand this is how I'm spreading my resources. This is how I can maximize that. That creates a barrier of entry. The other big problem with RTS games is we become a society that's less accepting of losing. You know, the, oh, well, you gave it your best shot, but you came up short, and that's okay. Has sort of hurt RTSs because it's one of the few games where there's a definite winner and there's definite loser. Even in first-person shooters, you sort of have a team, so you mitigate the blame for a loss. You have a chance to win. Most first-person shooters will do some kind of ELO bracketing, so you don't basically go into the meat grinder and just get killed over and over and over again. But in an RTS game, you can be fodder. And sometimes it's hard to find players that are worse than you. So I think that's sort of the problem I see with RTSs, is by their nature, how will they exist in sort of this modern time?
I think somewhat differently. Sure. The RTSs have had to adjust. Now, I do think it's true that right now, this is one of two genres where I believe this is the case of the only three genres Blizzard works with. Three and a half if we're counting Hearthstone. The StarCraft II occupies the field. I don't read that as being a problem for the genre so much as sometimes there is just something good enough that there doesn't need to be anything else. The reason I think that's what's happening rather than sort of the end of the genre is it is true that it's always going to be sort of a genre with a kind of a specific following. But it turns out, as you know, again, StarCraft II shows, it's actually not a particularly small following as far as these things are estimated. It's not going to be like a Battlefield or a first-person shooter, but second to first-person shooters, it may be about where, you know, as far as your following goes. We've seen several fairly modern entries. We've got the problem with the other staple, Command & Conquer, is that Command & Conquer 4 finally just drove that franchise into the ground, except the Red Alert games have continued to come out and do fairly well. Red Alert 3... Did we have Red Alert 4? I can't remember. I don't know what Red Alert we're on now. I own all of them, but... And then, as I said, we have a Kickstarter for a kind of a persistent world RTS. I don't know if that'll work or not, but I'm interested to see them try. But then we have Sins of a Solar Empire. We have... kind of a move for towards tactical battles in a lot of traditionally turn-based games like Sword of the Stars. You have, what are other good ones? MOBAs, in many ways, are effectively real-time strategy games. They're just evolutions [S2] Sure. [S1] With a very small set and no base building. We have Dawn of War, Dawn of War 2. Granted, Dawn of War was 3D, but not modern. What we considered modern. Dawn of War 2, however, is fairly modern. Again, got rid of base building, and it really was kind of, it straddles the distance between MOBAs versus an RTS, because it's basically a squad-based MOBA, which we see in Company of Heroes. There have actually been, using sort of the technical definition of a real-time strategy game, there have actually been kind of a lot of real-time strategies. The only one that became an eSport is StarCraft II, which is actually three games at this point. Or, well, two games at this point, and will be three games by the end of it, which has kind of kept it moving strong. The point here being, there's actually, I think, kind of a lot of demand for these things. And what we're seeing is, as I've always said, there's always been kind of a, you get a lot of them, and then there's a dieback. And then you get a lot of them, and then there's a dieback. And I think what you said about technology is what is absolutely correct and is what drives that. You sort of hit a point where you can't do anything new, so you stop doing anything at all. But then we'll make the step forward. I would say that if anything hurt traditional RTSs, it was probably League of Legends. Because the kind of people who... Because you can get in and out of a game in 45 minutes.
Right, it's time.
It's time. But really, even though we call them a different genre of MOBAs, there's really no practical distinction between a MOBA and a real-time strategy game, except that if you define RTS as to must include base building. If you throw out must include base building, you know, or must control multiple units. Right? But... ultimately, it is a strategic game on some level, and it is in real time. So, real-time strategy.
Well, you bring up a good point. I mean, the genre has always been full of offshoots, like games like Mech Commander. I mean, there is sort of base building, but not really, because that sort of occurs before and after.
You pick your max.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's always been offshoots of the Age of Empires staple.
And Warcraft had missions, not many,
right,
but had missions where you couldn't build a base, where they, right, gave you all of your units, and...
And the Age of Empires campaign's like that, too. Yes. It's like, here's your units, go have fun.
And so that's why I say, I don't think you can really define RTS by base building. Now, you may be able to say you need to be able to control more than one unit, and that's the difference between a MOBA and...
Even then, I'm less concerned about that. I mean, it's always RTS multiplayer versus RTS single player have always been fragmented along the same lines.
And again, League of Legends, legal issues aside, let's not kid ourselves, Dota and League of Legends grew out of Warcraft 3. So clearly they came from an RTS one way or the other.
Well, and as we talked about Warcraft 3, I mean, they came from the fact that Warcraft 3 had these powerful hero units. Right. And people were like, I want different heroes.
Right. What if I... Well, and even, believe it or not, even StarCraft... mods introduced heroes.
Sure, which
and
that's is where it why came Warcraft from. Yeah.
3. Yeah. And so it's been a... And so I would say it's another one where you can't really say RTSs are even... I don't think RTSs are even dying. I think that a lot of the energy has been diverted to... And I say that because, you know, Sins of a Solar Empire, Stardock was very successful with Sins of a Solar Empire. Released numerous standalone expansions, went quite well. Dawn of War 2 has some base building, very little. It did quite well. Of course, Games for Windows Live collapsed like a fly in a cupboard, so that's...
For the best.
Yeah, for a lot of reasons. And so, and those are both not super recent, but fairly recent. And the trick is, when you're dealing with a game that's meant to be played for 4 hours at a time, typically its longevity is pretty high. And so you don't need more games to replace it.
I guess my question is there was an age when there was five or six blockbuster RTS games, and now we're seeing them sort of come out, not counting MOBAs, which I think you make a fair point that you probably should count MOBAs.
Well, at least they're why we don't see five anymore. Sure. Because I think a lot of the energy has been diverted, because you see a bunch of MOBA. People, everyone, no one's managed to reproduce League of Legends and Dota, but a lot of people have tried.
And we'll continue to try.
And we'll continue to try, because there's a lot of energy spent there. But I think that's energy that ultimately was diverted from real-time strategy. But, you know, even though we did used to see more, they all ultimately broke down into Age of Empires, or Age of, let's just say Age of. Age of Craft,
right.
Star or War, and Command and Conquer.
And Total Annihilation.
Total Annihilation 2 are well remembered now through the glasses of nostalgia. They were never as big as the other
Well, true.
Ones.
And there was another big... Was that the big...
Supreme Commander.
Yeah.
Kind of the spiritual successors to Total Annihilation, which is Supreme Commander, a lot of units. But Supreme Commander's not... the standalone expansion of Supreme Commander actually isn't that old. So I don't know that it's fair to say they're gone. True.
There was a big fantasy one that I can't remember either around the time.
Masters of Orion and Master of Magic had
I think
tactical
Masters. Yeah, this
element.
But once again, like you said, we've always seen RTS has never been a tightly defined genre.
Right.
It's just sort of been we've
And it gets into the confusion between tactics and
to me, the definition strategy. Has always been you click units, you tell units to do X.
Right.
Whether it's gather resources, whether it's fight, whether it's to build, that's sort of always been to me, you have pieces that you move in specific ways.
Right. And
while
so,
people are moving their pieces and you sort of have...
Some of these games, the problem is like it's really more tactical combat sure. than it is strategic combat. And that also is... Those phrases get used incorrectly by me,
sure.
up to and including me. As they have very specific definitions that absolutely no one uses. So that causes confusion within the genre. But...
Well, I mean, RTS is... maybe that's the best way to think of it, is it's always been a catch-all term for a specific... class of game, sort of the legal definition of how you define anything is you know it when you see it.
Yeah. Definitely a famous definition from the seminal U.S. Supreme Court case on obscenity is I know it when I see it.
That's sort of become the best definition of almost anything is you sort of know it when you see it.
And that's why I always love it when advertising says genre straddling. Like, well, that's because everything straddles multiple genres because the genres are poorly defined.
Right, and they're it's not even so much that they're poorly defined, it's that they evolve quicker than we have time to set in definitions.
And so in some sense they need to be poorly defined because the genres are in many ways kind of how I look at them is they're stereotypes, you know, there's an element
right.
of truth, but you know, without having the same game over and over again, you're never going to quite hit it. So anyway, I would not say real-time strategy is dying. I think it's in one of its regrowth periods before one of its dormant stages before it grows again, purely because right now we have a lot of fairly recent games, like within this general technological bracket, that you can still play. And we've got
sure.
them for space, we've got them for fantasy, we've got them for modern world through the Company of Heroes games. I mean, we've kind of got every subcategory covered, so what else are you going to do? And
yeah,
when we go forward again, I think we'll see another crop. But RTS is very prone to sort of the crop theory, whereas like you grow your set of RTSs, and once everyone has their RTS for, you know, their one or two or three or four things they want to see, they're kind of done. So I think the only one we're even kind of missing is sort of the traditional fantasy RTS, oddly enough. We don't have a great current fantasy RTS.
They keep trying to make Game of Thrones into a fantasy RTS, because it seems like it's the Holy Grail, sort of.
It seems like it ought to work.
But I think it's sort of a problem of time.
And another one that's sort of is sort of that we kind of leave out when talking about RTS, but in many ways is much more a game that constantly gets thought of as a tactical or turn-based strategy game, but is really an RTS, is Total War.
Yeah.
Any of the Total War games. Because if you actually sit down and play the game and don't simulate the battles, you spend way more time in what is effectively real-time strategy with the pause button, which is why you could argue, well, it's really tactical because you can pause it.
But it's an evolution.
It is. It's another way. And that's another one that I would probably classify Total War as being closer to RTS than it is to any other genre. Because while you can pause it to formulate tactics, the focus is really on the movement and the battle itself. I could go either way on that one. My point being, the Total War game, they come out with those all the time. So,
yeah, that's a solid point.
You know, that's all I mean is StarCraft. We've kind of got the field occupied. We've got all the fields occupied, except for fantasy. Again, I really cannot come up with a good real time fantasy game. Spellforce tries, God bless it, but I just don't think it really has the clout to be considered the genre defining fantasy RTS the way Warcraft was.
Well, one of the interesting things, and this is out of left field, so feel free to disregard this as crazy talk. But in a lot of ways, the other thing I see that's sort of an offshoot of RTS game is any of the card deck building games. Because since the resource gathering occurs previous to the actual game, but the card playing, while it does sort of have this turn element to it, it's sort of real time in the sense that you're sort of changing your tactics on the fly. In a way, I mean...
Isn't that true in Civ 5, though, too? You respond to threats on the...
Sure. I mean, Civ 5 also blurs the line to me.
Oh, fair enough. I kind of see...
At a certain point.
Well, and where it's really starting to blur the line is any of those games that have simultaneous turns.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and especially like the mobile card collecting game genre that we're seeing. So, like, another game I'm going to look at is The new MechWarrior Tactics card game, which probably will never actually be playable. But setting aside that, let's look at what they're attempting to do. They're taking Mech Commander, and they're taking out the resource gathering through the missions by essentially handing you cards, which are really just placeholders for resources you have. And you sort of do the resource building prior, and then once you start the battle, yeah, it's turn-based, but it's sort of this notion that, you know, it's sort of unfolding in a way that's simultaneous, that the turns really have become popular again because it'll allow you to play a game over days rather than having to sit and play the whole game in one sitting.
Predefined pauses.
Yeah.
It's an interesting, and it does show kind of the blurring between turn-based and real-time. For card games, I still tend to view them as turn-based because most of them also require you to gather resources within the game. Yes, you've already built the deck. But it's still really, ultimately, much, again, I use this word again, it's a much statelier affair where you're, you know, I've been playing a lot of Hex, and they really very much are turn-based strategy, or they are strategy games, let's put it that way. And in the MechWarrior is interesting because they are simultaneous, and it does have these card elements, and so that one, I think, is much closer to a real-time strategy game. Any of the ones that have simultaneous turns, you're blurring it a little bit because effectively that's all Total War is it's goes a little bit further. It kind of approaches it from the other side, that this is really real-time strategy that I can pause anytime I want, making it more tactical. The card games tend to be, this is turn-based strategy that we move simultaneously, so that portion of it effectively happens in real time because you can't react until after I've made my moves. And so those are, I think, the two kind of movements from their respective sides, and where exactly you draw the line is a matter of personal preference.
Right, and I mean, it's, RTS is ill-defined to begin with, and it's not making it any easier.
No. But it is a genre that I think is, I've caught, let's see, if before I say, maybe RPGs, but after RPGs, probably the genre I've spent the most time with far and away is going to be real-time strategy, so I'm... And I own almost all of them, whether I want them or not, including more than a couple indie titles that we haven't mentioned, but definitely check out Steam. There are several RTSs of various qualities available. Star, it's one of the Star ones, but there have been so many games that start with Star recently that I get confused. But yeah, they're definitely out there. And I think that's as good. Any final thoughts on real-time strategy games?
No, I think we've put it in a good plot. I think you're more optimistic than I am, but that's always the case.
This is true. We'll talk a little bit about turn-based strategy. Go turn back the clock a little and talk about turn-based strategy, which also, I think, is doing fairly well when you really think about what turn-based strategy is. But
it's having a rebirth.
It's doing much better. It was the one I thought was dying, and then it stubbornly refused to do so. So we'll talk about that a little bit next week. For now, though, I want to talk very briefly. This is going to be one of my briefer segments because I don't want death threats. But talk a little bit about...
I can still send you death threats.
You can still send me death threats.
All right, perfect.
It's expected at this point. But we're going to talk a little bit about EA. And I don't think this show has made any sense. I'm not a huge fan of EA. I'm really not. They are detrimental to kind of gaming as a hobby in a lot of ways. And... they especially detrimental to sort of gaming as an art form, and they cause a lot of problems, which we have addressed in many other episodes. Gonna go the other direction today. No, I'm not going to tell you what EA does well. They do some things well, but
they are kind of a victim of their own success.
They are, and that is also true. Some days, and in some sense, they're just easiest to pick on because they're biggest. So there are all sorts of, I can kind of defend EA on a couple of levels. I choose not to. And this is not meant to be a defense of EA, but it occurs, you can't help but notice that for as much as they get named the worst company in the country, which is ridiculous, by the way, which I think we've also talked about briefly, there are worse companies in America.
By far.
I can name 10 just within the oil industry, so...
Whoa, let's not call names here.
I'm not gonna say any names. there are more people in the oil industry than Exxon, Shell, and, you know, not even talking about any of the big players. There's a lot more to the oil industry than people realize, unless you are from Texas, in which case maybe you do realize that there are pipe fitters and people who dump toxic waste up and down the highways.
Whoa.
Allegedly. So, but most of them don't. So, and of course, none of the people who have any, who are in any way related to the show would in any way do anything like that ever. So that's the present company excluded, of course.
Obviously.
We're going to have to cut all of this out. But anyway, no, it's so EA is not the worst company in America. That may be the worst video game company in America. In fact, I feel pretty confident that they are.
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know? Okay. Well, is going after Activision Blizzard?
I think most of the... I'll discuss it more in my short segment, but some of the mobile companies, they're way more predatory than EA.
I don't even count them as people. They're like a subclass.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, so, I mean, at least EA gives me Dragon's Age and...
The Battlefield games are my favorite of that genre.
At least they give me things that I might one day care about. And eventually they might fix SimCity, so...
Well, they're making it single player now.
I know. So eventually,
which is what they should have done to begin with.
Eventually they do things that I at least enjoy.
Because, and that's, I guess, kind of what I'm getting to. EA, by virtue of how big they are, we actually do have some control over them. Because they can't just make some money. They have to make a lot of money because they have a lot of shareholders that will eat their board alive if they don't. This drives a lot of their abhorrent decisions. But it also means, but ultimately, and here's where this is all headed, cut to the chase, ultimately what drives their abhorrent decisions is that we let them do it.
We're enablers.
Yeah, they need a lot of money. And so when people get, I really think, you know, there was never any chance that the SimCity debacle was going to destroy EA. But I think it hurt them bad enough, hurt their image bad enough that they were starting to at least believe, true or not, that their bottom line was being affected. That's why they're spending not inconsiderable money changing it to what people claim they wanted. I don't think they believe it'll sell any more games. I think they're purely doing it as marketing ploy.
They're doing it first when they sell SimCity 2.
Yeah.
Because they sort of renumbering, I'm guessing, or whatever they're going to call it.
Whatever they do.
So it'll sell.
Yes. Because they lost some credibility and they want it back. That shows... You know, yeah, cynically, does it change anything? Not really, but it does demonstrate a point, which is if it really causes a problem, we actually have more control over them than an indie developer that's just going to close up shop and send all their people to other places. EA can't really do that. I mean, once you get to the point where you're that big, they're not concerned with just making money. They need to make a lot of money. And so things that affect public perception of them, they do have to address on some level, even if it's, you know, not particularly helpful to us as gamers. So maybe stop. You know, it doesn't help to complain about EA and then make them the most successful video game publisher in the country.
Sure.
And you know, when it actually becomes a point that people don't just complain but are actually scared away from a venerable franchise like SimCity, they're going to take steps to address that. Maybe not the way we want, but they will take steps to address that. So that is the correct way to go about things, is to not buy stuff from EA. It's not even so much about boycotting EA altogether. It's about, you know, not pre-ordering. You know, don't pre-order EA games. Because you need to be able to have the option that if they do something just totally abhorrent, that you just don't buy it. They are real bad about doing things like trying to take out the used market, try day one DLC, which is just, they should just be beaten to death for, you know, things like trying to make the game cost a lot more than the game costs. On the other hand, from purely economic perspective, inflation has kept going for the last 20 years and the cost of video games really hasn't gone up nearly as much. So I kind of suspect that's a little bit of what we're seeing now. In the past, they've been able to prevent cost increases by decreasing cost inputs. Media got cheaper. Games got shorter. I think we're at the end of what they can do in that vein. And so, yeah, I'm a little bit surprised that this generation hasn't already done it, but I kind of expected at least a $10 increase. You know, so some of that is not really an EA problem. It's just a reality of the financial situation we find ourselves in problem. Something is going to give. They aren't going to do these things for free. Now, it's why I'm a huge, do not misunderstand. It's why I'm a huge fan of the indie rebirth, because even though maybe only one in 20 indie games is really any good at all, they make it all worthwhile. They really are the future of sort of, I think, games as art. But getting people in to play indie games normally involves something mainstream. That's EA. And as long as we continue to buy EA games, they will continue doing things like this. So the buck kind of stops with us. EA depends on... people say, well, it's just the casual market. EA can't just use the casual market. The Wii proved that if it proved absolutely nothing else. They won't stick with it. EA needs people who will play the same Battlefield game for 2 years at a time. Even not just counting people who just play their one game. No, just among gamers. If gamers get upset enough, they have to fix things. And so, you know, get upset, get people to not buy the game, because even a 10% miss on the projected sales is a very clear signal to EA that they've done something wrong. And the fact that they aren't getting that signal means that we're really pretty complicit in what's happening here.
No, and I mean, we'll put all of our sins on the table. I mean, when they first announced Origin, I'm like, I'm boycotting that. Which lasted exactly zero games because I bought The Old Republic. Which, come on, Origin. So, I mean, it's like, we say we're going to boycott them, we don't. It's hard for... The one thing I'll say is a lot of times we as gamers, and certainly I'm guilty of this, is we do have a lot of the sound and the fury.
But amounting to nothing.
That amounts... That quote. Yeah. And that it amounts to nothing because we're like, we're going to boycott EA and we'll never buy another game. Well, people buy their games. I mean, the thing about it is it's always... as a consumer, you have to pick and choose your battles. And the one thing that I always come back to when we talk about an EA boycott, and the reason why I can boycott more games than some is I don't play any of the Battlefield games. So that helps. But that's because I don't play them. It's not because I'm making some principle moral stand. I'm going to buy the next Dragon's Age game. That's a spoiler alert. All the sound and the fury about I'm going to mount against EA.
I'm not sure I will, but...
I mean,
that's not even really necessarily an EA problem. That's almost a BioWare problem.
Sure. I mean, but once again, it's not because you're not doing it on a principle boycott. You're just doing it because you don't think you'll enjoy it.
I tried, and I did good for a while, and then they released another game, which I promptly bought. So
I mean, but that's the problem. The thing about EA that I think gamers forget is some of what they do is actually quality. And when we say we're going to boycott everything and we don't, we're not sending them the right signals of this is the quality we'll reward with spending. That's even worse
than doing nothing.
Right. And this is the these are the things we're not going to support.
And I did make it a couple of months into Battlefield 4. I had some friends that were, you know, made sure that people were enjoying it and that they had fixed a lot of the launch day issues. And that's sort of where I am with EA. I have not pre-ordered an EA game. I got Sin City the day before it came out because I wanted to save the $5 and had already decided I was getting it. Live to regret that decision. That would be one of my suggestions, is do your best not to pre-order things. I mean, look, the pre-order bonuses really matter. Sometimes. But, yeah, so if they do, no judgments here. This is a safe place. This is a circle of friendship. But, they're the worst company in America. First off, that's just the definition of a first world problem.
They're not even worse than Perfect World. Who makes the Star Trek MMO Neverwinter
Nights. That might be worse than Perfect World.
Perfect World pretty much now just makes gambling simulators with keys and lockboxes. I mean, it's not even a game. It's a slot machine in which the payout is virtual items you can't sell for money. I mean, that is far more... I mean, EA just dreams about getting away with that. I mean, if you look at anything EA does, it's because somebody else has done it and been rewarded for it. I mean, it's not like EA, to shatter the myth, it's not like they sit around in their office and are like, what evil thing can we come up today? We're out of puppies and kittens to kill. You know, how can
Well, they've already killed all the major developers that mattered, so that's running out of evil things to do.
I mean, I'm saying they did that. They're never almost first to be evil. They're just better at it because they have more power. Evil. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like this idea of they have more power to project, so it seems worse. But they're only taking concepts that other people have already done and been rewarded for.
Fair enough. So yeah, that's.
But that's not a defense of evil. I'm not saying like we should reward that. That's just
no, we shouldn't. We should stop them. We won't.
We should stop everybody. That does
we should. And so I would say, and I've gotten better about not pre-ordering things in general. That's just because, gosh, I don't remember the last positive game launch I was part of. They're just all disasters. So I really can't. I cannot think of the last solid game launch I was part of.
Not counting console games. Most console games launch.
Fair enough. I actually don't play a lot of console games. I'm much more PC than console.
No, I know you are, but I'm just saying that would be the one exception. I'd say, like, Assassin's Creed 4.
And I don't pre-order those because I just don't think of it. I got Assassin's Creed 4, 6 months into the...
Sure, but I mean...
But you're definitely right. Console games sort of need to work
when
they come out, which is why it was weird that Battlefield 4's launch was... Because it's also a console game.
Invisible War. Human Revolution. Sorry. The third Deus Ex game.
Invisible War was
terrible.
Terrible.
Yeah, right.
The launch wasn't any worse than anything else. Terrible. The game was just awful. But yes,
I would say the last Deus Ex game was the last one that I bought that I had a lot of trepidation about that turned out to be way better than I thought it was going to be.
Well,
not counting the boss battles.
And I have pre-ordered, I think the only game I have pre-ordered right now is Final Fantasy X.
If we're not counting Star Citizen.
Yeah, if we're counting Kickstarters, I have kind of a lot of things pre-ordered.
That's how I look at the Kickstarters.
But Hex I am playing currently, so I don't, so that's...
Solid point.
Value for money, and then I'm involved in 3 other Kickstarters now because I have a disease.
Yeah, but yours is not nearly as bad as mine. I Kickstarted a Mega Man board game.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. And I have the last Kickstarter, the Kickstarter I'm on currently is... guy who made Final Fantasy Tactics is making another Strat-Tac game. Making another tactics game, basically.
Oh, interesting.
And I threw $20 at that. I don't think it'll meet its funding goal. But
hey.
If it does,
$20 still well spent.
Yeah, it's $20. Well, I get the $20 back if it doesn't make this. So, I'm trying to...
I mean, if it does fund, that's...
And then I did put money into Novus Eterno, which is the first Kickstarter that I've just immediately regretted.
Has it ended yet?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, and it's getting funded. I just don't think that if they can pull it off, it'll be great. I just have, of the 3 big Kickstarters I'm in,
it's
the
least
likely. Yeah. I forgot about the mandate. Gosh, I really do have a problem.
See?
4 Kickstarters.
I can remind you of your bad decisions. I'm also in the mandate, so don't feel like I'm judging you.
Mandate, this tactical thing, which is Unseen something. I forgot that. I only put $20 into it. I don't have to remember the name. Kickstarter keeps track of that for me. Star Citizen and Hex. Are the ones I'm
in. I have Wasteland. I have.
So I've got 5 games. I've kickstarted 5 games. One of which I can play already in one and a half if we count Star Citizen. I don't. But.
I don't know. I formed a company. I feel like I've already completed the metagame.
Once the dogfighting simulator's in, I'll feel Star Citizen is playable. But. Hex is pretty playable. It's got a lot of problems, but I really feel like I'm R&D testing a trading card game. Anyway, we are enablers. Make peace with it. Don't make threats you won't carry through on. And if your threat is, I will never buy another EA game.
They know you're lying.
Yeah.
We know you're lying.
So what you do is you say, look, this is awful. I'm never, because the nice thing about their business model is they need us to keep buying their crap. Not other games. They're not going to buy, I'm not going to buy the next Dragon's Age game because of how bad Sin City is. Sim City. Yeah. But they might buy that I'm not going to buy any of the downloadable content for Sim City if I'm pissed off about Sim City.
Sure.
That's what caused this.
Or this direct sequel.
Right.
Which is why I think Dragon's Age 3 will be fixed.
Right. Very possible. Very possible. So that's where you hit them, is make it clear to them that you're not buying any of their content, and they will... speaking of Novus Eterno, I just got a Kickstarter update, which is for anyone who heard the vibration.
Real time.
Yeah, so we're updating the updating in real time. You can get into Novus, which is true. They actually have been in playable alpha and beta for a while, so that's what this is me getting into their into the actual game.
Oh, okay.
So I tend to pick Kickstarters that you can get into the actual game. The only two exceptions being the Mandate, which I just really want to work.
I do too.
And this Unseen, War Unseen thing. I can't remember. Whatever it's called.
And mine's sort of a segue onto this, which is about Flappy Bird, which is...
I've never heard of and have no input.
It's an interesting little story. Polygon ran an article about it, I think Friday or Saturday. And I'm never quite sure what I think of Polygon, because I'm not really sure who they are or what their deal is. But they sort of fall into this pretentious niche. And basically, the long and the short of it is Flappy Bird is a game created with Game Salad. And the entire premise of the game is you tap a screen, and the bird flies up, and then drops down when you don't tap it, and you have to navigate it through Mario pipes. And it literally looks like a cheap for Mario and pipes. The economic model of the game is that it's free, and then there's advertising on the front of the game, and the guy gets revenue by you looking at the ads. For reasons that are heavily speculated on, none of which I have an opinion on one way or the other, this has become the number one selling game on the iTunes store. And so this guy is raking in somewhere around $50,000 a day, I think was the number I've seen tossed around. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. I haven't done any verification on that. But I imagine if you're the number one iTunes app and you're generating ad revenue, that's probably a hefty chunk of change. Well, this guy apparently has now said that he's going to yank his game from the store, which I think is happening sometime today, because he doesn't like the success of it. And you saw this article from Polygon that the central premise of is, I don't understand why this is a thing. I don't understand how this game got important. I don't understand what this says about gaming, what this says about gamers, how could you predict the success of this game? And the answer is you can't. The thing that sort of disappointed me about this article, and is the thing I always need to remind myself of, is we're in the minority of gamers. Especially Steven and I, we have created a whole podcast that we tongue-in-cheek refer to as being, you know, basically pretentious thoughts about gaming, talking about games as art. We spend a lot of time dissecting genres of the game, and we struggle with it because they're not well-defined, because there's these economic concerns that we talk about all the time that are secretly driving it, less so on the artistic merit, but that's true of all art. And we've talked about that sort of ad nauseum of, this is not a unique problem to games, this is just sort of the latest version that humanity's faced with this. And we want to look into games, and we want to pierce back this veil, and look at the stories that add meanings to our lives and add the sort of enrichment to the human condition that, you know, at some point this is all worthwhile. And I totally support that, and I'm assuming you support sure. that because you're here recording a podcast with me where we get to be pretentious and
exactly.
discuss, you know, the motivation of characters in Final Fantasy games and what is shown on the screen versus what's not shown on the screen. And other pretentious things, finding symbolism, meaning, we do it with literature, we do it with movies. But that ignores an essential tenet of gaming, which is another important part of gaming that we forget, is sometimes a game is just a game. It's just there for entertainment. And this is going to be super pretentious, so if your pretentious threshold is met already, you can feel free to zone out for the next few minutes. If you want some more pretentiousness, feel free. But I was at the opera the other day, which is a very pretentious habit. And there's intermissions, and I look over at the people sitting next to us on their smartphone, which is an old-school BlackBerry, like old-school. And there's this 70-year-old man in his suit and tie at the opera. And what is he doing during intermission? He's playing Breakout. Breakout's a 40-year-old game. And the central premise is you move a thing, you hit a ball, and you knock out bricks. And he's sitting there going to town having the time of his life in this intermission during 10 minutes knocking out bricks with a ball. Why? Because it's entertaining. And sometimes a game is just played because it's entertaining. Am I here to judge on you wanting to navigate a Mario fish through some pipes? No, I don't care. Sometimes you just play a game to pass time. Sometimes you play a game just for the challenge of it. Not everything has to be this deep symbolism. Art, movies, music, books. They've all moved past this. Sometimes it's just fluff. When I read a Star Trek novel, it's not because I'm looking for a deeper meaning of life. It's because I want to read about Star Trek characters having a little adventure. If I go see a fluffy movie, it's not because I need to go find some deep meaning about the spirituality of life and the nature of how we exist together and the deep-rooted core of how a dead tree is really symbolic of family. Sometimes I just want to watch people have an adventure in a movie. I don't need more than that. They're a reason why they're called popcorn flicks. I don't need to watch the space movie where they invaded L.A. Like Battleground L.A., I think is what it was called. Yeah. Like, that's a fluffy popcorn flick. So I just needed to kill 90 minutes and be mildly entertained. Sometimes I don't need deeper meaning from it. And the same thing's true of games. Do we need to dissect Flappy Bird as some sort of laboratory experiment on the nature of humanity and the question of why, how games work and how we can monetize this and X, Y, or Z? Sometimes the easiest explanation is the correct one, and the easiest explanation was is sometimes people like a challenge and it was just a fun way to pass the time. And it was free. So, I don't know why we felt the urge to dissect this other than there's a lot of people spending money to make mobile games who aren't and are upset that somebody basically got the golden wrapper ticket and won the video game lottery. Sometimes that happens. So, my thought is while we certainly are going to relish in the pretentiousness of gaming and we're certainly going to further that because it's a role that we need to see more of, that doesn't mean everything fits into this one particular lens. Sometimes a game is just a game.
No, I don't think there's any harm. It's not that everything needs to be analyzed. It's that some people, it's fun to analyze these things. I mean, it's just another game that's being played, and a game that needs to be played to hopefully cause games to be taken more seriously in general. But obviously, I think for a lot of people, even in the games which maybe demand more analysis, like, you know, your average RPG that has some sort of deeper story or geopolitical consequence or whatever, even then, a lot of times the actual player is playing it because, well, it's entertaining. That's, I think, hopefully, usually a reason people are playing the game. There's nothing wrong with, you know, asking these questions, obviously, or I wouldn't be here. The trick is to not lose sight of why we have art in the first place, which is for a multitude of reasons, but really, I believe, chief among them, an artist would say, well, it's to communicate meaning. Like, okay, yes, but for that communication to be effective, it has to be appreciated, which almost always means on some level it has to be enjoyed. Even if what it's communicating is abhorrent, the viewer, listener, watcher, player has to be connected to the art in some way that normally takes the shape of they wanted to be there. Very rarely involuntary. Well, actually, if I were taken to the opera, it would be involuntary. But there are very few involuntary art screenings.
Said it was pretentious.
It's been tried before. I just don't do the opera. I need to understand the words. And I don't speak enough Latin or Italian.
They have subtitles now.
Do they?
Yeah, it's on the screen.
Oh, fantastic, then. I'll have to look into that. They were doing an opera of Star Trek and Star Wars, or a symphony of Star Trek and Star Wars music downtown.
That'd be interesting. Yes.
Yeah. Anywho, so I don't have any problem with asking those questions, but what you don't want to do is, for lack of a better colloquialism, disappear up your own rectum about it.
Sometimes the answer is obvious.
Yeah, sometimes the answer is obvious, and it doesn't mean that asking the question was wrong. You just need to be prepared to accept the answer. So
that's pretty much all I have on that. It was just one of those moments where there was like a clarity of
Eureka.
Sometimes it just is a game.
And sometimes it is. But, and I guess, you know, it's always, I enjoy analyzing games, and I have no intention of stopping. But sometimes the base motivation for playing it is, it was fun.
Right, I mean, that's my point when you look at Breakout. Breakout's endured for 40 years.
It's just fun.
And it's just, it's mindless. It's fun. I mean, there is no better, there is no magical recipe to make the next Breakout because it just exists. It just is there.
And so we come to the close of episode 27. Next week we will be talking about turn-based strategy games.
Yes.
and also other things, though I don't think we've planned that far ahead as to what the other things will be, but there will be something.
It'll probably be about video games.
Yes, we will continue to be pretentious.
It's our best speed.
And hopefully you will be the pretentious. Hopefully you'll just go out there and have some fun with some games.